recall, did you talk with Commander McCall on the radio about 0200 that morning?
I wasn't up there till around 5 a.m., sir. So that would have been Mr. Cousins.
Would have been Mr. Cousins.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Lucchese. No more questions.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Commander Walburn.
Good morning, Mr. Lucchese.
Good morning, sir.
As navigating officer, I have some questions concerning, some additional questions concerning the navigation equipment. You mentioned the fathometer alarm may or may not have been set, and that ever who is departing with the vessel generally sets the alarm. Is that correct?
I didn't say whether it may or may not have been set, sir. All I said is that it's a practice to set the alarm. You okay. Just said that.
Yeah, the standing orders for the operating procedures for the vessel for departing port, one of the items is setting the fathometer alarm.
Yes, sir. You know, if I've had any questions on it, I know I hesitated before when you asked me what to set it on. If I had a question, I would ask the master and see what he wanted to do. It's not something, you know, it's something I would do normally, but if I was in a port that was different to me, I would ask the master, or if I had any question at all, I would have asked the captain.
The fathometer reading is the amount under the keel, is that correct?
Right, up by the I believe up at forecastle head, there's a transponder up there.
So the vessel was drawing about 10 fathoms, is that correct? Nine fathoms?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
So if you had a reading of 30 fathoms, it would, under the keel, it would actually be, you would be in a depth of water of 39 fathoms.
Be correct, sir.
Going out of Valdez, what depth of water would concern you when you saw a reading on the fathometer gauge?
I don't recall, sir. I've been in Prince William Sound 25 times. Most of it was years ago. I've only been in there around four times since I've been on the Valdez. And I would have to go look at the chart and speak to the master what he would want me to be concerned with in that situation. It's a very important alarm, and it needs to have consultation, I think, just, you know, or set a policy on it. It's something that I would talk to the captain about.
Is there a policy aboard the Exxon Valdez concerning the fathometer alarm?
No, sir, but I would speak to the captain. There is a policy, sir, that we would set it, but at what depth, this would be, you know, up to the master. What I'm saying is it would be set every time, but the actual depth on the fathometer would be, you know, you'd either do it or talk to the captain about it if you had any doubts. And I'd probably talk to the captain, see what he wants to do.
And to clarify one point, it's the responsibility of the departing watch officer to set these alarms, or is it the responsibility of the navigating officer to set the alarm?
Departing watch officer, sir.
Thank you. Some other questions about the steering system. When you're in gyro mode and you turn the helm, does the rudder angle indicator turn at all?
No, sir.
It should still remain at zero?
Yes, sir, because the gyro has it.
The third mate testified after the first helm order of right 10 degrees. He had called the captain and talked to him. Where in relationship to the telephone to the captain's cabin is it to a rudder angle indicator?
Right on top, there's a the telephone would be right here in front of you, and there's a rudder angle indicator right up there. There's a couple of telephones on the bridge, but you could see it from any place in the bridge. It's not any kind of.
Is there one in the chart house, in chart room?
Only the course recorder roll, which would, no, there is none. Sorry.
There's no telephone in the.
Oh, yes, there is. There's a telephone in the chart room. I forgot. I didn't know what you were talking about. You got me confused, sir. There's a telephone. There's two telephones in the chart room, and there's two telephones out in the wheelhouse, sir.
The telephone in the chart room, if the third mate was using it, could he see a rudder angle indicator from there?
No, sir, because it was nighttime. No, it wasn't up there. But usual policy at nighttime is to close the curtain between the chart room and the wheelhouse so that people's eyes don't get disturbed by the light. But I wasn't up there that night. I can't say what they were doing.
going into some policies concerning navigation, since you are the navigation officer, concerning navigating near shoal water or dangers to navigation, such as shoals, reefs, etc. What is the ship's policy as far as distances to navigate close by?
I believe it's spelled out in the company manual, sir. I can't recall what those policies are at this time. I know that they're, I've been off the ship 46 days and it slips my mind. But we had a policy. The courses are all laid out in advance to any place we're going, usually by myself under direction of the master. And you'd know right away if you're setting up on a shoal. I certainly wouldn't want to get within a mile or two of a shoal, almost a mile anyway. And I've never had the occasion to get that close to a shoal, so.
So I'd like for you to refer to the chart behind you there and read out the course in the outbound lane. In Valdez Arm.
Well, there is the one laid off here, sir.
Wait, you're going to need it. May not be on there.
Exxon Valdez, Second Officer Lloyd McCain is approaching the chart. Trying to pick out course headings that are marked on the chart. He's being questioned by Commander Darrell Waldron from the U.S. Coast Guard.
It's not on there.
It's not on the chart. Okay. It is on the original chart.
Yes, sir.
It's 219. The master stated that he was going to come left to 200 to avoid ice, and then he was going to fare up into the inbound lane. He did come right to 200. I'm sorry, he came left to 200. What course change would he have to make to fare up in the inbound lane? From 200.
From 200. I don't know, sir.
He was at 219.
Where was he at 219?
Going in the outbound lane at 219. Came left 20 degrees to 200. He told the VTS that his intentions were to go to divert to the inbound lane to avoid ice. Coming from a course from 200 to fare up into the inbound lane heading out, what course would he have to come to?
Sir, I still don't see where he would change. Where is he changing course from?
When he gets into the inbound lane, he would change course to head back out again.
Mr. McCain, if you can't answer the question, that's
okay.
You can't answer the question, Commander.
From the 2339 position there in the separation zone, he's heading at 200. What course change would put him in the inbound lane, heading outbound?
When he got to lane, he'd go to 219.
To 219, and that would be right 20 degrees course change?
From 200?
Right.
That's correct, sir.
But instead, he went left 20 degrees to 180.
I don't know that. I wasn't there when they do all this.
Okay. I have some questions about the duties of lookout. When you assign people lookout duty coming in or departing a port, what kind of directions do you give to lookouts?
I don't give them directions every time. Usually when I get on a watch, when I come on the ship, I have a talk with my people. And I expect a lookout merely to observe things, listen for things, and to call me if they see something or hear something that doesn't sound right. That's the only duties they have. They're just lookouts.
You stated that you made one trip when you encountered ice. Did you give any special directions that you can remember to the lookouts during that transit?
The master was on the bridge, was Captain Stalzer, the other captain on the ship, and he told him he wanted to know what he was seeing up ahead, and we maneuvered through the ice at that time. So,
did you have to make course changes to move through the ice, or did you
make?
Yes,
sir, we did.
Where was the lookout posted during that time?
On the bow, sir.
Thank you. When entering or leaving a port, is it customary to have a lookout on the bow?
That depends on the weather conditions. We most times we will put a person on the bow for a number of reasons. But occasionally, if it's really severe, we'll have the man on the wing. The weather is really severe. But his duties, again, are the lookout.
So you were on deck shortly after midnight. Did you consider the weather conditions there at that time too severe for a lookout?
At Bligh Reef you're talking about?
Yes.
In my judgment, no. I mean, it was pretty mild weather there.
Questions about night vision. We've talked to some other licensed personnel concerning night vision. Could you explain what night vision is and the effect of white light on night vision?
I'm not a doctor, but I can give you my experience with it.
Your personal experience with it.
Night vision is your ability to go from a lit room into the dark and be able to see things in the dark. If you were to turn a white light on, you get into a bright white light or something, it would take a little bit longer to readjust to the dark again so you could see.
My experiences as a deck officer required the use of red lights in the wheelhouse. Is that the customary?
Well, I'm a Naval Reserve officer myself, and I know how the military does things. But in the Merchant Marine, we don't have red lights. And I have gone from the chart room, where I always keep the light turned down, and gone out into the wheelhouse in a matter of a minute. I've got night vision. I don't have that problem.
So it takes a minute to get your vision from going from the chart room?
That's me, sir. I can't say on the average individual how a person, would do things. So everybody's different is what I'm saying. Human beings are all different. Some people might be faster, some people are slower. And depends on how long you were in the light. It depends how bright the light was. I always keep the lights turned way down in my chart rooms.
Am I understanding you correctly, if someone goes in and out of the chart room several times with the white light on in there, that their night vision may be affected for up to a minute after leaving?
Commander, I think what Mr. LeCain just said is he's speaking for himself. Bingo.
Thank you. After the casualty, did you have occasion to go up to the wheelhouse and look at the radar?
I went to the wheelhouse, sir, but I didn't look at the radar.
Did you have occasion to survey the area around the vessel, and did you see any ice?
Yeah, I do. I looked around the ship, and I didn't see any ice, sir.
The following morning during daylight, did you see any ice at that time?
I saw some far off across the bay there. There wasn't any over by the ship.
Could you indicate on the chart where you believe the ice was at that time? Would you mark it also, please?
This is just visual. I can't actually, the mark will only mean where I perceived it to be.
Excuse me. Is that permissible with the board for him to mark the chart?
Not the one underneath?
Well, yeah, it's all right to mark this one if it covers the proper area.
So I'm supposed to be island.
Yeah, it's not went down far. Here's Bligh Reef. Yeah.
You're listening to live coverage of the National Transportation Safety Board investigation into the marine accident involving the Exxon Valdez. We are now listening to Lloyd LeCane, second officer of the Exxon Valdez, being questioned by Coast Guard Commander Darrell Waldron. This coverage of the National Transportation Safety Board hearing is brought to you by KSKA Anchorage and APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Hard to see from here. Is that in the TSS or above the TSS?
It's above the TSS, sir. But like I said, what I'm telling you is what I'm visually seeing. I didn't have any radar targets. It could very well have been over in the TSS.
I mean, this
really doesn't mean anything what I'm telling you. It's just I'm telling you I observed ice over there.
Okay, would you just mark that and put your initials on it, please?
Put ice. Okay, now let's understand this doesn't mean anything. I mean,
I understand.
And just put the date over here, today's date, and write,
what's today?
Today, 18th.
18th?
18th. And exhibit 12D, just above here, exhibit 12D.
Did you also put the approximate time that you saw the ice, because it was several hours later?
0700, I would say. But I really can't say that. I don't know. Okay. It was when it got light in the morning.
It's AM. Would AM be appropriate?
AM. Let's also remember again, this is just a guesstimate. And the ice very well may have been over a little bit from there. Okay.
As a navigating officer, when you went to the bridge, did you have occasion to look at the chart to determine where the vessel was?
Yes, sir, I did.
Did you see any marks on the chart?
I saw the marks for the position of the ship and a number of fixes, but I didn't really, I just saw where the ship was. That's what I was concerned about.
Did you notice any aids to navigation from the ship right after the casualty?
Look at the chart?
Sure.
Are you going right after the casualty?
Yes.
A couple hours later.
Okay. A couple of hours later, which age navigation did you see?
I could see Glacier Island.
Okay.
I could see Bligh Reef. And I could see, I guess this light back here, Bixby Island.
Yeah.
Okay. That was, as a matter of fact, I was using visual bearings off of Bixby Island. And some radar tangents off some of the land to determine the position. You should see where we were. Okay.
Okay. What's the approximate distance to Glacier Island Light from the vessel from Bligh Reef?
It's about 5 miles, sir. That's a guesstimate, yes.
In the standing orders or watch operating procedures, there's a statement that when navigating close to shore, that the position of the vessel must be frequently verified. What does frequently verified mean to you?
Every 3 to 5 minutes in that situation, it's you're close to shore, you want to know immediately if anything's happening.
What does close to shore mean to you?
If I got land within 4 to 5 miles, or even close, 3.5 miles, let's say, I'm getting my position quite quickly. I know where I am, you know? I mean, I'm not talking about up here in Valdez Narrows, where in the arm there, where it's very close, but when you get further down, let's say 3 miles, I would be getting a position every 5 minutes, just checking where the ship is.
Would you explain a procedure for taking a fix and how long that it would take? Let's say a fix using a visual bearing and a radar range.
You'd go out in the bridge wing. You would first thing you do is set the radar up with a distance off the light, okay, or what you're getting the bearing off, the distance off of. You'd go out quickly to the bridge wing, you take a quick bearing on it, and you just, not quick bearing, you take a bearing off the light, whatever it is, you remember what that was, you look at your watch, you'd come inside, and you'd have the distance off already, and you just go right in and plot it. It should take no more than a minute.
Okay.
Or less.
I'd like for you to refer to Exhibit 2 Echo. It's a course recorder log.
We don't have it.
Attachment A would be the first attachment, please.
Okay, sir.
This is a photograph of the original log. Do you recognize this as being the type of log that's on the vessel?
Of course, recorder roll, yes, sir.
Okay. I'd like to refer first to, and I'm going to use the Greenwich Mean Time for ease here. About 7:50 to 8:30 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, the course there. Would you describe that course as far as the smoothness of the helm, the helmsman?
I can only describe the line. The line is wiggly. It's not as straight. It varies back and forth, the slight bit.
Could you describe the line between 8:50 and 9 a.m.?
That's the same. It's not exactly straight. It's got some deviation. It's back and forth a little bit.
Could you compare the two?
They're very similar, sir.
I'd like for you to look at the next page, which is Attachment Bravo.
Right now is Exxon Valdez Second Officer Lloyd LeCain. He's at the direction of Coast Guard Commander Darrell Waldron. He's examining the course recorder.
Compare the two courses at 0850 to 0830 and 0750 to 0830 and 0950 to 900.
You mean 0850 to 900, Commander?
No, it's... What are you telling me? You want me to compare the course between 0745 and 08... and 0 what? 0830?
Right.
And
with what?
With what, Commander?
With 0950.
0850 or 0950?
I'm sorry, 0850 to 0900.
Yeah, it should be right. They're the same way. They look like they're not straight lines. They're deviate a little bit.
Okay. The course at 0850 was steered by Mr. Kagan. In your expert opinion, is it possible that the course from 0850 to 0900 was not hand steering but automatic pilot?
Commander, we discussed this yesterday, and I think we found out that by looking at this chart, one cannot tell in a fact-finding forum without doing some analysis whether or not these lines were indeed hand steering or on gyro. Your next question.
I have some questions concerning company policy, especially concerning alcohol use and personnel with Exxon that have in the past abused alcohol. In your opinion, whether do you know if anyone at Exxon Shipping knew or should have known that Mr. Hazelwood continued to have a drinking problem?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to object. New is one thing if this witness knows of his own knowledge, but what others should have known or could have known is beyond the scope of this witness's knowledge, and I would instruct him not to answer in that form.
If that is your instruction, so be it. Mr. LeCane can only answer his own experience.
Have you ever been asked about prior alcohol arrest or alcohol related misdemeanors for drunk driving, et cetera, when you have applied for a position or by Exxon?
No, sir, I wasn't asked that.
Do you have any personal knowledge of Mr. Hazelwood drinking or having a drinking problem?
No, sir, I don't.
Have you ever observed alcohol use on board this vessel or other Exxon vessels?
No, sir, I haven't.
Do you know of anyone who has been denied employment for previous alcohol use?
Sir, I wouldn't have knowledge of that.
Do you know of any Exxon personnel that have been reassigned to other duties because of alcohol problems?
No, sir, I'm not privy to that.
Couple of clarification questions on the gyro. If the vessel is in gyro mode and the helm is turned right 10 degrees, right 20 degrees, then right full, but yet is still in gyro and is removed from gyro to helm, what happens with the rudder?
I believe this is the case. I'm not sure. I believe that when you put it into automatic, I mean, when you put it into helm, it should go right over and meet it. I would have to, go to the manual on it and check on that. I've never had an occasion to do that because whenever I change course, I make sure that the rudder is exactly in the middle and the controller is exactly in the middle. I don't, professionally, that's what you do. You don't just change course or put things into manual steering without checking these things.
Would you describe fully any post-grounding conversation that you may have had with the master concerning the casualty?
There weren't any concerning the casualties there.
How about with Cousins?
Mr. Just the one I described to you on the bridge that morning.
Mr. Kagan?
Are you talking about discussions with Mr.
Yes,
Kagan?
Yes, discussions with Mr. Kagan.
Just one remark he made to me. He said that he turned the wheel, and for an instant, nothing seemed to happen. For a moment, nothing seemed to happen.
Did you find that unusual or something that would be expected?
I didn't find it either way. It was an offhand remark he made to me, and it really didn't register. I don't know what was going on the bridge, because I wasn't up there. I don't know what sequence of stuff was going on up in the bridge. It may have been he was just took, he put the rudder over. Sometimes the ship doesn't move right away depending on the speed or you know. So I just figured it was some remark like that. He put the rudder over for a couple of seconds, nothing happens, and it didn't go over.
We've had a variety of answers concerning how long it takes for the vessel to start turning after the helm is moved. In the loading condition of the Valdez that evening at 12.3 knots, how would you expect the vessel, how long would it take for the vessel to start moving at 10 degrees right rudder?
Sir, I really don't know, sir. I'd have to check with something. If I changed course myself, I would see if the rudder went over, and I would expect the ship to move in a very short amount of time. I can't say what the time is. I've never timed that. I'm not an expert on that. Okay.
Did you have any post-casualty conversations with Ms. Jones?
No, I didn't.
Do you know of anyone, did you have any conversations with anyone else on the vessel concerning the casualty that may be of interest to the board?
Since I wasn't there when the vessel went aground, anything I might have said was what I might think, and that doesn't mean anything. I wasn't on the bridge. I don't know what occurred up there, so I don't remember talking to anybody about it except possibly just small talk on the bridge, just wondering why we were on Bligh Reef. But it was, I don't know because I wasn't there, sir.
What do you think happened based on the small talk that you heard?
That small talk doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's the only people that know exactly what happened on that bridge that night are the captain, the third mate, and Mr. Kagan. And anything else is irrelevant.
Did you have occasion to identify the position of the vessel while on ground? Was that a routine procedure while you were grounded there and on watch?
Every 15 minutes, I would get a position, make sure we were in position. Okay.
When taking a radar range of Busby Island, what is the echo that you receive? Is it on the point of the island, or is it up on the mountain behind it?
May I take a look?
Sure.
It's radar echo we were getting was right here where the light is. You get like a horn shape on the radar. You get a visual bearing, and you get right on the end of that horn, you know where you were. Or it'll give you a position anyway.
And when you took these numerous positions, they all fell fairly close.
Yes, sir, we were right about the same place.
When was the first time that you took an actual fix of the vessel?
Right after I assumed the watch at around 5 a.m. Really right before, I went out and made a quick cursory look and got a, I made myself feel secure that that's where we were. So I went and I checked the radar and everything so that when I relieved Mr. Cousins, I knew we were there, where we were. So it's not customary. You always find out where you are before you relieve a watch. You don't just.
Do you recall looking up at the heading indicator when you came up to the bridge to see what the heading of the vessel was?
I can't recall looking at it, but I did within an hour, within a few minutes of being up there. I didn't look exactly when I walked on the bridge. I looked up there. I can't recall within a degree what it was. It was somewhere around 285 to 289, somewhere.
Okay. Did the vessel appear to be settling at that time, or could you have any?
I didn't have any feeling on that, Commander.
I have no other questions.
Thank you, Commander. Mr. Howitt.
William Howard is going to be asking questions for Alyeska Pipeline Service Company.
I understand from your testimony that you were handling communications for some time after the incident.
That's correct, sir.
And could you repeat from what time on that was?
Okay. I was on approximately 5 a.m. on, but I was dispatched at different times to do things. So I was there for a while till around 10 o'clock, and then Mr. Cousins came up for about an hour, hour and a half. And then I relieved again at noon, and during the afternoon I was on the bridge, but I was off the bridge at different times to do things. So I ran communications during this period, yes, but at different times I was in different places. So.
During that time, did you receive any communications over the Marine VHF channels from Alyeska?
I can't recall. I know I made a couple calls to Alyeska to request things, but I can't recall receiving any at this time. It's 45, 50 days after the incident, you know.
Could you describe those calls you made to Alyeska, please?
The only one I made involved, I believe, getting some hoses from some other ships, cargo hoses. I also asked about some reducers we needed. And Alyeska said they were going to handle it and get on it. So that's all I can say about that. The Coast Guard was doing some of those calls because we had a lot of information coming up from the chief mate of what he needed in parts, so for the hoses and stuff. So some of those calls are handled by the Coast Guard on the ship there. But I don't know who really handled most of them, sir. I just don't recall any longer.
Could you relate to me who in the Coast Guard was handling those calls?
I believe it was the XO, handled one or two of them, that's all. That's only when I was there. I think he handled two calls, and they answered him. You people answered him, and I couldn't see any problem.
Were there other personnel from the Exxon Valdez that were handling the calls?
Through part of the period, Captain handled some of them. I can't say who else. It was a very, very busy time, as you can imagine, on the bridge. We had all sorts of things calling. Like I told you, I had call almost every 30 seconds there, so we had many things going on. But every call that I received was answered or handled some way. I had a pad of paper next to me, and I wrote down whatever we got.
Thank you. That's all the questions we have.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Hallett? Yeah. Captain Deppe?
Mr. Chairman, we have no questions.
Thank you, Captain. Mr. Colucciello?
Mr. LeCain, I need a little further clarification on the pedometer alarm. Now, you said, I think, did you check the pedometer before getting underway and the alarm is set? Is that correct?
I don't, whoever the mate is up there would set it. Mm-hmm. Usually consultation with the master.
Okay. Now, and you thought that 40 fathoms might be a figure that might be used.
Sir, I just used a figure, and I would have checked with the captain, see what he wanted. Remember, I have, you know, haven't been in here a number of years, except for a few times, so I don't know what the captain would.
Well, whatever the setting is, it seems to me that when you're in port and you're alongside the dock, I don't understand how you can set the pedometer alarm and not have it go off immediately because you're in such shallow water at that time. So how is the setting made so that it takes effect after you get out of?
You can shut the alarm on and off.
Right.
So you just shut the alarm off.
Okay.
And then you can turn it back on again and you would.
Okay, so what you've done, there's a setting and then there's also an on-off switch.
Sir, I believe so. Like I say, whenever I've done it, I've read through the book. It's been a while since I've done it.
I see. So that you you can make the setting as a separate action from initiating the alert, getting the alarm to be ready to go off. So now that you go out of port, assuming this has been done, at some point then someone has to go to the pedometer and turn the alarm off after you get into deep water?
Sir, I can't recall. It's been a long time since I've.
Well,
I need to have the manual again and the policy of the ship.
Well, it seems to me that if this is essentially how it works, then somebody has to, after the setting is made, you leave port, get into deeper water, you'd be turning it on. And if this is the process, then you would have to, when you're approaching port at the other end, you would have to go turn it off before it went off because you were getting into shallow water where you intended to go. Do you recall anyone doing it that way?
I I can recall the alarm going off, getting into shallow water and turning it off, because we've got the, what we wanted was the alarm. I mean, you want the alarm to go off, that's the idea. Usually you want an alarm to go off before you need the alarm. You know, I mean, you don't put an alarm at the point of extremis. You put an alarm so that it gives you a margin to be able to pull out of whatever your problem is. And most alarm's going to go off anyway when you're coming into port, because no matter where you go into port, most places you will get into shallow water.
Right. Is the alarm just an audio alarm, or is it both an audio and a visual?
I can't recall.
You mentioned, I believe, that you did...